Be seated. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So who here likes having dinner? Okay, we've got about half a dozen honest people. I love having dinner. I love having dinner. And I so rarely get the opportunity to go to a banquet. I'm sure it's the same for you. I think the nearest thing that most of us ever get to going to a banquet would probably be a wedding. And if you've got as many cousins as I have, you've been to a lot of those. Okay. Now, at a wedding, all eyes are on the happy couple. And some people love being the center of attention. Some people are very confident in the spotlight, while others dislike being watched or scrutinized. And if you've ever been watched or examined, perhaps for an oral exam or, you know, a practical exam in school by someone who's assessing you, it can feel like a lot of pressure. And then there's the dinner table itself. Now, for many of us, this would have been a place where we gathered as young people, as children, to have meals with family before and after school or work. And it's a place that we learn to gather with our immediate, family of origin, before we begin having meals with other people. So we learn how to be there, and a lot of people get schooled in, you know, elbows off the table and all that kind of stuff. But it's essentially a place where we get to be known and seen and recognized, and we don't feel as though we're under scrutiny unless your elbows are always on the table. But I think we all understand why there's a reason that so many first dates are conducted over dinner, because people know that's where you get to know someone, over food, right? Now, my mum comes from a farming family, and in my grandparents' farmhouse in the kitchen, there was an incredibly long table because they had four children, all of whom got married, all of whom had children. Some of my earliest memories are from sitting around that table, from the hubbub of chatter, from the conversation. There was a sacredness to it, this place where food would be exchanged. My grandfather has this thing where he gets really annoyed if anybody has to ask for anything on the table. So you should never have to ask for someone to pass the peas. This is his thing, right? Because he believes that, you know, in the kingdom of heaven, you never have to ask for anything. And I think he's been trying to instill that and, you know, hoping in case he doesn't make it that he could experience it just once. The sacredness of the table was so important in my family growing up that when I was in high school, I was bullied by a former friend of mine. We had a bit of a falling out. I can't even remember what it was about. But she turned a bit mean, and she was a lot bigger than me, so I got my ass kicked a few times. And my mum's response was not, "Oh, you poor baby, I'm so sorry that that happened." It was, "I cannot believe that young woman has eaten at our table." And I'm just like, the table is also very sad, mum. Yeah. But it taught me to think about the way that we gather in quite a different way, and to really experience the Eucharist as a meal in some ways, that I hadn't before that. So I was always very grateful for that. Now, Jesus, I think, was a foodie. I think he loved having dinner. I think perhaps Luke's gospel, I think Luke was a foodie. I think he liked to record that, you know, Jesus was constantly having dinner with all kinds of people. And we meet him today being watched closely, being scrutinized by the Pharisees. And by this time, I'm sure he knew that he was being watched. I'm sure he felt their eyes on him, because he's gone toe-to-toe with them several times now. And they're getting progressively angrier about what they see as his interpretation of the law being very wrong about, you know, the things he does, the people he's with, who's clean, who's not. And that started in chapter 6. So, you know, we're in chapter 13. The beef is pretty heavy by now. So why is Luke so fixated on this table? Why is he portraying Jesus as a bit of a greedy guts who loves to go to dinner? What does gathering around a table mean to you? What have your experiences been? I think what Luke is trying to say is he's trying to lead us to the Last Supper. So we've got Jesus having all kinds of meals. And then at Passover, we have Jesus sitting down with his disciples, having his last meal, breaking bread, and saying, "This is my body, given for you, as we will do today. The same with the wine. We imitate this in a mini sort of resurrection celebration, a mini Easter every Sunday with the bread. So something to think about when we're sitting down to a meal is that that's where the first one happened. It happened over dinner, and it might be fun to do that sometime. Then at the end of Luke, we're not there yet, but at the end of Luke, there's that great story about the road to Emmaus and the two disciples sort of after Jesus has been killed, and they don't know that he's risen yet. And they meet him on the road and they don't recognize him. They're like, who's this guy? How does he not know about Jesus? Oh my gosh. And they explain it to him, and then they invite him for dinner, but they don't recognize him until he takes the bread and blesses it and breaks it. So I think what Luke is really trying to drive home to us is the table, the Eucharist, this is where we meet Jesus. We meet Jesus over this particular meal. And as Anglicans, that is very, very central to our faith and to what we do. And that's why it's at the center of the liturgy. You may not have noticed. Sometimes the sermons do go on a little bit. But the Eucharist is supposed to be the longest part of the service because that is where the focus is. So I'm going to keep this quick. All right. Now, as with our modern-day weddings, in Greco-Roman culture, seating plans were very, very important. They demonstrated status. And the further away you were seated from the head table with the host, the less important you were. So to seat someone important on the fringes was a huge faux pas. And if you've watched any of the reality show Bridezilla, you know that this still happens. Like, you may want to put your mother-in-law-to-be, or your new mother-in-law, right on the back with the photographer. You may want to do that. Don't. That is a huge mistake. That is a huge mistake. But the people of the time, for them, this shame and honor thing would have been a much, much bigger deal. It wouldn't have just been like poor etiquette. So Jesus is trying to hammer home the countercultural way in which the kingdom of heaven is different from the status-driven world that he finds himself in. And to the first listeners that he's preaching to who lived in small communities, when he says, invite in the poor, invite in those who cannot repay you with another dinner invite, it would have called to mind specific individuals. So they would have known who the beggars were on the street. They would have known who the blind man was. They would have known his parents. They would have recognized exactly who these people were. And they would have been uncomfortable because if they invite in those people, then they're not inviting the people that they're expected to invite for dinner for the status exchange. And so this is where, for them, being a follower of Jesus starts to feel quite uncomfortable because he's saying, you've got to do something new now, people. It's not about, you know, getting over to Sally's place because she makes the best lemon meringue pie. Like, it's not about that now. All right? So for us as modern hearers, what does this mean? Like, we don't know who all the poor or the lame or the people in need in our community are. And to many of us, when we think about those people, thinking about the halfway house at the top of Harvey, or perhaps when you're around the mall and you see people asking for spare change, that kind of thing, inviting those folks into your home could feel like a very daunting thing. And in some cases, depending on, you know, what's going on with them, it may actually, you know, maybe it's not so safe, right? Stranger danger. We get groomed in that from an early age. However, good news, St. Paul's and St. David's, we have another home, and it's right here, and it has a full commercial kitchen. So something to consider as we're going into this interim period, as we're thinking about who we are as a community and who we want to be and how we're going to show the love of Christ in our community, what would it look like to have a soup kitchen running downstairs once, twice, three times a week? What would it look like to have a food program or to have classes to teach people who have not gained the skills, who did not have the benefits of the kind of family tables that I grew up with? What would it be like to teach those folks basic cooking skills? Now, I actually know of a church. It's called St. Lydia's. It's based in New York. And I had the pleasure of hearing the priest who founded it speak once at some conference that Father Fenton sent me to. Okay, and the whole ministry of St. Lydia's is a table ministry. So people meet on Sunday evenings. They go to church, and the Eucharist, the whole service, the hymns, the worship, the readings, everything is done while people are at the tables, okay? And the reason for this is because the priest who founded it realized that so many people in New York basically live in shoebox-style accommodation with enough room for a bed, a wardrobe, and perhaps a chair, that they were missing out on this sense of community. They didn't have the ability to entertain people in their home, to have someone over for dinner, to have that connection that we all know exists over food. So what she did was she said, we need to be mirroring what Jesus did in the Eucharist. We need to be doing that in a church very intentionally for these people. So those kinds of churches exist. Like, there are people who celebrate the Eucharist at dinner. What would that be like? Okay? I've actually skipped ahead in what I'd written, so the Eucharist will be the longest bit today. So when we think of inviting people to our banquet, who is on the fringe in our community? Who doesn't get invited in? Or perhaps who's isolated? Who just needs a lift to church? The banquet Jesus is talking about, the one that he's trying to get across to people, exists not only with a radical form of hospitality that invites people who are not known or who we'd not normally choose to eat with. What he says about the places of honor, for those of us who are already here and already know this way of being, this way of living, it's not a call for us all to run to the worst seat with, you know, like, it's not a call for that so that we can be honored and pulled up. No, what he's actually saying is he's saying, at this banquet, there is no status, no status. We are all one in Jesus Christ. There is no longer Jew nor Gentile. There is no longer Greek or Canadian. There is no longer slave, free, male, female, gay, straight. Everybody gets a seat at this table because we're all of equal value. So it's that worthiness piece that's being driven home again. Jesus has been talking about worthiness, what, since chapter 11? I think that's where I picked up the preaching schedule. So it's about understanding that you are enough, you are welcome, and so are the people that you may not usually choose to eat with, okay? It's about saying you can be a blessing to someone else at this banquet by saying, hey, mate, hey, friend, come, take a seat. Get comfortable. This table is your table. This table is your table. So when we celebrate the Eucharist in our church, all are welcome to receive. We're not trying to get caught up in the trappings of who's baptized, who's not baptized, although if you would like to be baptized or confirmed, come see me. I love a good baptism. Love a good baptism. But the reason that we don't do that, we don't quiver over that, is because it's not for us. Jesus didn't say, here is my body broken for everyone who's baptized, and if they're not baptized, don't give it to them because it's not right. You know, he just said, this is my body. It's given for you. For you. For everybody out there. We're trying to convey, when we do this Eucharist, to everyone present, that Jesus came for all people, died for all people, rose for all people, and is present in the breaking of bread for all people. May it be so here. Amen.